Welcome to Money Mile. I am your host, Justin Waller, and I'm happy you are here. We like to think of Money Mile as standing at the corner of triathlon and personal finance. We believe that age group triathletes are the lifeblood of our sport, and we want to shine the light on some good people doing great things. Today, we have a very special guest on Money Mile. Today, we are joined by Rebecca McKee. Rebecca has been a triathlete for over 23 years. She improved her Hawaii 70.3 race time by 9 minutes this year over the prior year. She finished first in her age group at Oregon 70.3 in 2022 and 2023. By the time this episode goes live, she will have been at the Kona World Championships 8 times. She is a business owner, advocate for women in the sport of triathlon, and she is a great person to have a conversation with if you ever get the chance. We are going to discuss some of the great experiences and some of her biggest challenges. I will bet that some of these challenges you have never heard another athlete talk about, but I am also confident that she is not the only one dealing with them. I hope this helps bring a bit of awareness to some of these challenges and we can have more of an open conversation as a community about some of the challenges facing women in triathlon today. We also talk about Rebecca's 8th visit to the World Championships in this first year of a women's only race and what she is looking forward to. This is one of our special interview episodes, so it will be longer than a normal episode. There will be a brief form check opportunity in the middle-ish as well, so look forward to that. We will also have all the links for Peak Center Alaska and Rebecca's social media in the show notes, so you can check into all that stuff when you are back at your computer. But for now, drop your shoulder blades into your back pockets, pick your eyes up, make sure you have a nice forward lean from the ankles, and listen in to this conversation with the one, the only, Rebecca McKee. Rebecca, welcome to Money Mile.
Justin, thank you so much for having me.
I have thoroughly enjoyed our conversation thus far, and I'm happy to invite the community in for the rest of this. For those in the audience that don't know you, Rebecca, could you share with us a little bit about how you got started with triathlon?
So I've been in the sport 23 years this year, and 23 years ago, a girlfriend of mine just randomly talked me into doing a triathlon in Anchorage, Alaska. It's called the Gold Nugget, and it was at the time, and maybe still is, the largest all-women's triathlon in the nation, and it's the oldest triathlon for women, I believe, in the nation as well. It's a local event, and I could not swim. I borrowed a bike, and I was a runner, but runner from the sense of I ran a 33-minute 5K, and so I trained for this race, and I love telling this story. It was a 500-yard swim. This is in 2000, and I did that swim in like 12 and a half minutes, 13 minutes. I got out. I did the 11-plus-mile bike ride on my friend's borrowed bike that didn't fit, and I probably ran, you know, a PR for me for the 3-mile event that year of like 30 minutes. I can't even tell you. I probably should go back and look for the sake of the story, but what place I finished. And I crossed that finish line, and you would have thought that I won a gold medal in the Olympics. You know, I get emotional talking about certain events, and this is one of them. And the first time you cross a finish line in a triathlon, I always tell my athletes, it will either change your life in a way that you would have never, ever expected, or you check it off a list and you never come back to it. And for me, I knew the second I crossed that line that my whole life was going to change. And like I said, I get a little choked up because my whole life has significantly changed from that moment of crossing that line. And in 2014, I believe it was, I got to go back and look. I'm terrible with dates and years, but I'm pretty confident, I think. I came back and finished 2nd woman overall in that race to a woman named Kinsey Lane, who went professional that year, a professional triathlete. And I think about that journey of that first day crossing that line and not having any idea what place I finished and coming back. I just really have a lot to give to that event. And I'm so thankful that it's still an event in Anchorage. It brings a lot of people into our sport, which is so important, but especially women. And they have a division for moms to do it with their kids and things like that. And so it completely changed triathlon for me. You know, 4 years later, I started working on becoming a coach. And by 2009, you know, I own a full-on metabolic lab. all this stuff that you see in the news about the Norwegians and all this testing and all that, all this stuff that people think's new, we've been doing for a long time. And we have athletes that come and visit us from all over the world. You know, people always talk about how you shouldn't let something be your identity, but triathlon is certainly my identity. And I couldn't be happier about it.
Well, I am very glad that you've had such a great experience coming from the humble beginnings back in 2000 and the progression that you've made to where you're at today. And I'm so glad that you're here chatting with us today.
Thank you.
Obviously, you've had a storied career, so 20 plus years in triathlon. I've found that success means different things to different people. But at this point in your career, how are you defining success?
Well, you know, I think the first thing is getting up every day not injured. I'm 51. I'm perimenopausal. You know, things have really significantly changed for me in the last couple of years hormonally, which is, you know, always hard for women and especially competitive women when things, you know, you get up and you're like, wow, that hurts today, or I don't feel as recovered as I used to feel. And, you know, there's a lot of things that go on. And unfortunately, in the world of women's health and wellness, we're so many centuries behind. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but, you know, when it comes to even like, not to get too deep into the women's side of things, but women haven't had the attention that men have gotten. And for many years, we were basically told menopause, deal with it. And they did some studies back when, and they did them on a group of women that were above and beyond menopause. And essentially this study came out and said, these drugs aren't good for women. You can't use them. And so we had this 20-year gap for women going through perimenopause and menopause, where our doctors basically told us, you're insane, or you're not insane, you just have to deal with it. Or, you know, I know you get up in the morning and feel like, you know, driving your car off a cliff, but here's some more antidepressants, when, you know, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the menopausal process for women. And we at Peak are menopausal specialists. We work with women in menopause. We have, you know, very much taken the path of Stacey Sims, who's an amazing lady and has done a ton with menopause and the female reproductive science and sport related. So when I get to this point in my own life, I at least knew what was going on. But I think that's the biggest thing for me, is getting up every day and being able to do what I love. And I think that's the big, when you ask, like, what's success now? I want to keep doing this for as long as possible, and I want to stay as healthy as possible. And I want to be as competitive as possible, because that is important to me. But I have achieved a lot. And, you know, there's just a few more of those checkbox goals that I hope to get to.
Wonderful. No, you've got a lot going on in the sport and with you personally. And I appreciate you sharing a little bit about your experience with that, because that's not something that's often talked about. And I can share with my audience now, Rebecca and I were talking briefly before the call, I have had a couple of conversations with female athletes about the challenges around perimenopause and menopause and how all of that works. Even building a training cycle around a menstrual cycle. How does all of that work? How can someone perform at a top level or perform at their best while they have all of these additional challenges that they're faced with? So how do we maximize that potential and also not make it a miserable experience? Because if you approach that the wrong way, obviously I can't speak from firsthand experience, but my understanding is that if you treat that the wrong way, it can be a miserable experience and work against you in the process. Rebecca, I appreciate you sharing a little bit about what you've got going on there, and would love to talk more about that as we progress here. So, and actually, I think a little bit later on, we might tee that conversation up again here. So we think of Money Mile as standing at the intersection of triathlon and personal finance. So what is the best investment that you have made in your athletic career?
Oh, that's a tough question to answer. You know, I think the biggest and best investment I've made has certainly been to hire the right coach. You know, somebody that understands me, somebody that looks at my hurdles, you know, the things that are, I have certain things about my body that make it hard, that I can't go out and do, you know, 15, 20 miles at a time because of my hips. You know, I have an enlarged liver from a whole nother thing. And when you start to look at the list of things that are wrong with people, you either can let those things define you, and then that's your story, or you can be like, yeah, I have this thing, and I move on. And I'm of that nature. I can't let the things that are my You know, I had cervical cancer. You know, it's like the list is long, right? But I don't let cancer define who I am, or a benign tumor in my liver that makes it the size of a softball define who I am. Or, you know, it's like, but if you sit down and talk to people, you'll find, and if you listen to people and their stories, everybody has something, right? There really is something that we all get up every day and try to jump over. But I think that hiring a coach that really listened to me and understands my limitations and is capable of knowing those and still getting me to this, what I consider an elite level. And I think also gear, you know, I tell my clientele always buy the most, and I don't mean it expensive, like, you know, you can have a wallet that's cheap or you can have a Gucci wallet, right? Both of them are going to work for you. One's going to last longer. But I always tell my clientele, spend the most money you can now, because that's going to last the longest, right? Get the best that you can get at this point so that you have it as long as possible before you need to change it. And so I think that spending money on gear and making sure that gear works for me, like I've spent time in wind tunnels. I've spent time with, you know, making sure I have one leg that's a significantly shorter than the other. So I spend money on my bike fitter. I work with Link Innovations, Aaron Ross. He's freaking amazing. I work with Horik at Psychologic in Scottsdale. He's amazing. And I have this team. And so I guess what it really comes down to is I have this amazing team of people and the relationships, people, the coaches, the relationships that keep you from being broken. And then, you know, working to afford the best gear that I can afford.
That's great. And I would definitely echo that as well, at least from the gear perspective. If you buy cheap gear, you will be disappointed at some point. But you also don't necessarily have to ride the $15,000 super bike either. If you're buying quality gear that's going to last, you'll probably be a lot happier about that. But we'll also talk a little bit more about gear as well. I also think that the coaching aspect of thing is something that I've heard time and time again as one of the best investments that you can make. And it sounds like you're echoing that as well. Working with a coach that understands you, understands how to adapt to your individual nuances to make sure that you are the best athlete you can be. Any other thoughts there, Rebecca?
Yeah, and I just wanted to add in, you know, I'm very lucky about who my coach is. You know, I work with one of the best coaches in the world, and that's no exaggeration. Cliff English is the head coach at ASU for the women's national team there. They've won like 6 times now the national title, and his accolades are and resume is extensive. I mean, he's worked with Olympians. He's worked with, you know, Kona top finishers. And my coach is also somebody that's been in the sport a very long time. And he was also a triathlete at one point himself. So
a lot of experience to lean on there.
Absolutely.
Which is great. So at this point, what do you consider to be the most underrated aspect of triathlons, or something you think that more triathletes should know about?
Oh, geez. God, that list is so big. You know, I think the first thing is triathletes don't comprehend how important nutrition is, you know, your day-to-day nutrition and how you fuel your body, but then what you're doing when you're training and how to train your gut. And then also, unfortunately, and you know, I work with so many different companies out there, and they all have good purpose and they all have great products, and products are as individualized as the individual out there, right? Like some people can use one product but cannot use another product. But what always needs to be held at the forefront, and I do this with all of our clients, is that nutrition companies are out to sell you nutrition. And most triathletes actually take in way too much nutrition at the wrong time. And so I think that that's one of the most underrated things that's actually in our face all the time, but we just don't understand, you know, how many grams of carbohydrate do I really need an hour, and what can my gut really digest? And then are you actually practicing this in your training? And I think that's, you know, if I had to pick one thing that just would make the massive substantial difference for most people out there, it's probably that.
Okay. That metabolic aspect and having a better understanding of nutrition and fueling your body.
Yeah. And we cheat, right? Because we own a metabolic lab and we know those numbers exactly. And, you know, I think it's a lot of the reason why a lot of our athletes are really successful. We have a lot of ways to do this, even if you can't come into our lab, because We've been doing it so long that we know how to look at these numbers and understand people, you know, and especially salt. That's another one, right? People put too much salt in. Everything that they take has already got sodium in it and electrolytes in it. And then they're adding more and more and more, right? Because some company out there told them that they needed to do it. But I think there's also a lot of things that people don't realize they can do. These little changes, like, you know, making sure your clothes fit tight. And, you know, these little tiny benefits that you can get on the bike that make you more aero, like your tires, and they're free watts. I'm not the biggest person. And you look at my wattage output and people are like, how did you go so fast? And I'm like, well, I'm aero. Trust me, I am probably one of the most aero women out there. And, you know, back when I was working with Jim Manthus at Aero outside of LA, Slow Twitch did a big article on me because besides at the time, Julie Dibbins, I was the most aero woman that had been on their track at that point. When you're not a giant wind sail, that was a very long answer again. Sorry.
No, that's fantastic. And there are lots of different nuances there, whereas some people, depending upon their individual makeup, they might need more salt or more electrolytes, or if their history of cramping or whatever it might be, they might need that, where others don't. Perhaps maybe you could share with us a little bit about Peak and the metabolic testing that you do. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
We see a lot of different types of athletes. You can imagine we obviously work with triathletes, but we work with runners, swimmers, cyclists. We work with people that you've seen on stages in the Olympics. We've worked with coaches that come to us with problems with their athletes. And we have a master Olympian record holder, high jumper, that works with us. We work with somebody that's a medalist at the Pan Am Games for jiu-jitsu. And so it's really cool because we kind of have our own ongoing research project all the time as well. When people come in, and we can look at cross-country skiers, and we can look at NHL guys that come in and test in our lab. And we work with, you know, guys that are playing minor league baseball, and we have the ability to run obviously any kind of testing protocol. We are one of the only privately owned metabolic labs that have hospital grade equipment in the nation. And we are actually, as far as I know, the only one on the West Coast. We have a Parvomedic 2400 and we use a YSI 2500. So all of our equipment is medical grade. It's not handheld anything. It's not the thing that you push a button and it spits out some report. And my lab tech, Lane Messing, who I can't live without, she has a master's degree in kinesiology. And between the two of us, you know, we're data crunchers and we spend a lot of time, you know, getting people's information. And that's the thing, everybody's individual. So you come in and you do an assessment and you get your zones based on your lactates, but also your inflection points. So we are looking through the data to find, you know, where you stop burning fat, where you move into burning carbohydrate, what your zones are, where your VO2 max is, what that number is right now based on who you are, you know, your height, your weight, your sex. And then we take that information, break it out, give it to you based on your zones for heart rate and speed, or heart rate and wattage, and then your metabolic data. What are you burning in each one of those zones for carbohydrates based on your duration in that zone? And then the intensity, right? So we all know that, and I'm just going on here, but the metabolic, and I could talk about this stuff forever, but the metabolic curve, the way it works is that you can stay in a certain zone at a certain pace for a certain duration. And at some point in time, you're going to move into a carbohydrate burning system, right? Based on intensity or duration. And so we know where those points are. And we do a lot of Philip Skiba. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, but he's an amazing man that's, I think, spent a lot of time and energy over the years finding ways to map out metabolic data and how to, you know, determine zones and things like that. So we've kind of followed a bunch of models and basically have come up with a standardized way of presenting this information to people. I think that answered your question.
It did. Yes. Thank you. And it sounds like you have the capacity, and you spit out some names there that I did not even recognize. It sounded like gibberish to me, but hospital grade equipment allows you to better understand how each individual athlete's body works and is burning fuel to give them the information so they can train better and race better. Am I understanding that correctly?
Absolutely. And I think you just really summarized it fantastically well, in that everybody is an individual, and that when you come in, your results are unique only to you. And it's always interesting to us when people come in and they want to know their VO2, and then they want to know, how does my VO2 max compare to X, Y, and Z? But what we try to explain to people is VO2 max is like a fingerprint. Your VO2 max isn't comparable to anybody else ever, because it's developed at adolescence. And it all has to do with what you did up until the point that you hit puberty and what you were doing at those points. And so, you know, this kid that came out of the womb skiing and, you know, becomes a world-class Olympic skier versus me, who sat on the couch and watched TV until I was a teenager, you know, my capability to improve my VO2 as an adult was substantial, because I had no development up through adolescence, right? But substantial to a point, like you can only develop it so much. And whereas this Olympian who comes in the door, our capability of improving that Olympian's VO2 is minimal, but being able to get up closer to that VO2, we can help make that improvement, right? So there's so much science behind it, and you and I could talk hours, and I can talk forever about this kind of stuff, but it's very exciting and it's really neat. We've been really lucky with the people that are in our sport right now that are bringing this testing, bringing awareness to these types of tools that are available and how they're taking our sport to a next level doing it. It's pretty exciting, right? Especially for us who have been offering this stuff for some time.
That is great. And yes, but maybe we should have a whole separate conversation, do a deep dive on all this stuff. If we are doing this correctly, Rebecca, I envision that someone is listening to this conversation while they're out on their long, steady run, clipping away at, you know, steady pace miles. And I don't know if they necessarily need to fully understand all the nuances around metabolic threshold, but hopefully we've given them enough to tease that interest, and they'll let us know if we need to have another conversation about it and get really deep on it. Does that sound okay with you?
That sounds fantastic.
All right. If we can talk a little bit about your recent athletic experience, you had a great race at Ironman Hawaii 70.3 this year. Could you tell us a little bit about your experience there and how you were able to improve your finish time by 9 minutes over the prior year?
So the first thing I'll say is, I changed bikes, and while I really loved my old bike, and honestly, I was so emotionally attached to that bike that it was really hard for me to like admit that I needed to move on from riding the Diamond. And I think the Diamond's a great bike and kind of hurt my soul, but moving to the Trek, it just fit me so much better. It's made such a big difference for me that getting off the bike and being able to run, I've just really been able to get my legs under me and go. The other thing is that my coach and I changed what I was doing this year. And I ran a half marathon in January where my focus was specifically on that half marathon in Arizona. And we really built my base up very, very early in the season and started working towards the marathon here in Kona much earlier than we ever have before. And so I think that my run pace, along with changing the bike, and then I'll also have to give this, they changed the run course in Hawaii, and they made this course a different this year. And we actually had like 2.5-3 miles less on the golf course. All right. And that golf course is one of the meanest runs that I have done at any 70.3. And I've been doing this a long time. And so having less of it offered two things. One, being able to move faster, but also I was able to wear my carbon shoes, because running in those shoes on the grass with my hyperflexible hips was a really bad thing. I had not enough stability, but because the grass sections were so much less, I was able to wear these shoes. And as you know, these shoes are amazing. I mean, I'm running 15 to 20 seconds a mile faster in these shoes. And it's literally, I can do a run the same day in both pairs and I'll run 15 seconds faster. So I think those three things were the big thing, but I do think that I'm in a different space of fitness this year for sure.
Okay, that's great. And there's lots to unpack in there. We were talking before we started the recording here, you shared a little bit more detail about kind of the transition between the bikes and some specific nuances about your experience with that change and your history medically. Would you feel comfortable sharing with our community a little bit more about what you've gone through there?
Yeah, absolutely. So what was happening was the fit on the Diamond, we just couldn't move the bike around. And to save time and energy. I'm just going to paraphrase here, but we couldn't move the bike around anymore. I was at the limits of how we were going to be able to make this bike fit me in a way that I was able to ride it aggressively. And because of that, and because of the way my hips roll, it's interesting. I have bike fitters from all over the world that will contact me after I post a picture of me on my bike on Facebook. And they'll be like, did you know that if you change this? And I'm like, did you know if you asked me three key questions, you'd realize why we can't do that, right? And so I always find it interesting when people approach me about how you need to change your bike fit. And I'm like, you need to ask me some questions. But what ended up happening was, is I was causing so much pressure and so much undercarriage pressure that I was sitting on my labias really heavily, and it was causing soft tissue damage. And what ended up happening was I developed a lipoma. And for your folks out there that don't know what that is, it's basically a quote tumor, a benign tumor of fat. And lots of people have lipomas and all over their bodies. It's a, you know, a non-threatening medical thing. But for me, developing a lipoma in my labia that was 6 centimeters long and as hard as a walnut. Imagine sitting on a walnut trying to bike for 56 miles, 112 miles, and just the massive pressure issues and the saddle sore issues. And I was finally able to go and work with Porik at Psychologic in Scottsdale. And he has an amazing tool that maps your seat pressure. And this tool shows the progression of pressure over a certain amount of time. And just to get to the basics of it, because my mind is science and analytical, and I want to tell all your listeners all the details that they're just going to glaze over. There's these numbers that you have, and you shouldn't see these numbers for, let's say, an hour into your ride. Well, I hit those numbers 37 seconds into my ride, and then 3 minutes into my ride, I'm like well over these numbers. And he stops me and he's like, how are you doing this? And I'm like, I can't do this anymore. And so we had to get through, you know, the end of the year, the rest of the season. And then in April, I made a decision to change bikes and move to the Trek. And while, like I said, I had an emotional attachment to the Diamond, and it was very hard for me to let go. In fact, I kept trying to go back to the Diamond after getting the Trek because I just really loved her. And as soon as I would get on the Diamond, I would feel that pressure immediately. And so it was a change that I had to make, but I did it kicking and screaming. But the Trek has been, it's been a good decision. And she and I had to have a couple of conversations. We had to come to an understanding. I think it was more me than her, but I think she and I are on the same page now. We're operating as a unit.
Well, that's great. And I appreciate you sharing the background and kind of what you've gone through that experience. I know in talking with other triathletes, there are lots of things that we might look at as, oh, hey, well, I've got this thing going on, but I don't feel comfortable talking about that with other people. It might be a private issue. I appreciate you opening up and sharing what otherwise be or could be considered a very private issue. My guess is you're not alone. My hope is there's somebody else that hears this and realizes they're not alone either. And maybe there's something we can do about it.
And it's part of the reason why I'm glad we're having an opportunity to talk about it here. You're actually, this is the first time I've talked about it openly, publicly to the whole world. And I will tell you, I was very lucky. I have an athlete that is a plastic surgeon, a good friend of mine as well. And I went in and saw her and was like, what can I do about this? And she's like, this needs to be removed. And I had to have surgery. It was a 2.5 hour surgery. The lipoma was very deep. It was almost up against my femoral artery. It took 62 internal stitches. I had a lot of, and this is not an area, you know, think about the area here and how many stitches this is. And so then the external stitches, it took almost 8 weeks before I was able to get back on a bike seat after that. And, you know, I'm so thankful I did it. And I'm thankful that I did it when I did. But when we were trying to find anything out there about this, like, has anybody had problems with this? What have they done? What is the solution? We literally found one professional cyclist that had posted about this stuff at one point, and that was it. And I just like, are there only two of us in the world? This isn't realistic, right? And so I am hopeful that maybe somebody else hears about this and realizes, you know, go and see somebody. I suffered 3.5 years miserably in pain with this thing every single time I rode my bike.
Well, hopefully this conversation gives someone else the courage to ask some more questions, look at this with a little bit different lens. And sometimes we think, oh, we're tough triathletes. You know, if it's uncomfortable, we're just going to stick it out and keep going. This might be something that you don't have to tough it out. You might be putting yourself in a damaging position that might make things worse over time. Definitely recommend if you're experiencing some symptoms like this, you have a conversation with your physician about it, have some conversations in general, see if there's a way around that. It sounds like part of that, Rebecca, might have been your love affair with your Diamond bike and trying to hold on as long as you possibly could. And I've heard really good things about Diamond bikes over the years. I've heard great feedback. I don't ride one myself. I ride a Cervelo, but heard really good things about the Diamond bikes. I've also heard good things about Trek bikes. But it also highlights the fact that you need to ride a bike that fits you well. It might be the super fanciest, flashiest thing, and you just drool looking at it. But if it doesn't fit you well, it can be causing pain and discomfort to the point of physical injury, physically harming yourself, riding the wrong bike. Lots of good bikes out there. Let's make sure that the audience is taking care of themselves in this whole endeavor and not necessarily gutting it out just because. There are definitely some other opportunities there. So again, thank you for sharing all that, Rebecca. Anything else you'd like to add before we move on?
You're really awesome at summarizing. It's like you do this for a living. No.
It's almost like I do this for a living. So back to your race history, and we'll get a little bit more recent history here. So a few weeks after Hawaii, you raced in Oregon, the Oregon 70.3, and you finished first in your age group for the second year in a row while taking 5 minutes off your finish time from the prior year. Is there anything you did differently that we haven't talked about thus far in training for this race versus how you had trained previously?
Well, you know, I think we've pretty much highlighted it. It was definitely the bike change and being able to get off the bike and really run hard and feel confident in being able to run hard. And so that building of that base. And, you know, Oregon's an amazing venue. They really, I mean, they hit a home run with that venue, and it's in a great town. They've got a great cake shop that I can't like get off my mind the whole time I'm there. And whole time I'm racing, I'm like, I'm going to go eat at that cake shop. And then, you know, that swim, who can complain about a swim that's like a slip and slide? I mean, I swam 56 second 100s there. And let me tell you, my fastest 100 in a swimming pool is like a 127. And I sat on the deck for about 7 minutes after I did that and thought I was going to die. So it's pretty crazy to think like, is this what Olympians see when they move this fast, you know, in the bottom of the water, you know,
the bottom of the rivers going so fast.
Rivers is just like screaming by you. And you're like, you get a little vertigo from it. And, you know, when you get out of the water in under 20 minutes, it really makes for a lot of fun. Right. And then that bike course. Yeah. It's a great venue. I really had a lot of fun there this year. I think that the run courses flat and fast. And so, yeah, I think everything we've already discussed definitely played into effect. And I have to give kudos to my husband. He really is kind of like my secondary coach. He's the guy that's like out there always for me. And he really wanted me to run a PR on that course. And I was trying so hard, but the wheels came off a little bit right about mile 10-ish. Also, that probably had to do with some of the faster running because it was like, you know, you're so close.
Getting good feedback on race day out there can be good and helps you push harder. I don't know many folks that finish any race, if they're doing it well, cross the line and have a bunch of gas in the tank. If they do, I think they did it wrong. That's just me. So it sounds like you definitely left it all out there and got a good result from doing that.
It is time for a quick form check. Money Mile is powered by Waller Financial Coaching, a full-time fiduciary financial planning firm. If you want to improve your financial form and improve your financial independence, you can get a copy of Financial Independence for Triathletes by texting Money Mile, one word, to 33777. You will also be added to the Money for the Long Run newsletter. Again, text Money Mile, one word, to 33777. Now let's check in on that running form. If you have your own form cues, please use those. If not, here are mine. Drop your shoulder blades into your back pockets. Bring your eyes up to the horizon and lean forward from the ankles for the rest of this episode of Money Mile.
Most recently, you competed at the Ironman 70.3 World Championships in Finland and finishing 10th in your age group there. Congratulations on another fantastic race with that. Is there anything you'd like to share about your experience with the race in Finland?
I have four things to say about Finland. One, I got there way too late. The time zone change was crippling. 11-hour time zone change. They're the same as Alaska. And so the sun doesn't go down. We just could not get to bed. We could not stay in bed. We were up at 3 a.m. We were, it was just, ugh. So we really, our whole household really did a terrible job of dealing with the time zone change. And we did not help each other out because we would just finally get up and drink coffee and sit around and talk to each other when we probably should have been trying to sleep and, you know, passing out in the middle of the day. So that was the first problem. The second thing I think about Finland was the bike course was great. The swim venue was great, but that run course was terrible. I always rate an event on the run course. You know, the bike course is kind of where they can go and find mileage, right? And the swim is what they can get that ties into that bike course mileage. And as a race director, I get it. The bike course is almost always one of the things that, you know, the venue where the water is going to dictate how you put the rest of the day together. But I always think the run course should be representative of the place that you're at. Like you should be able to say, I ran in Austria. I ran in Australia. I know that, you know, for the 70.3 Zelam Say World Championships, that run was like running in the Sound of Music. You know, like the whole run, you're like, we are on the set of the Sound of Music right now, right? But in Finland, they made us run away from anything that said I'm in Finland, up the side of a highway for 3 miles, and then running through a subdivision, and then we ran downhill for three, you know, through some back people's yards. It was very strange. And the whole run course, I was like, why are we running when there's this beautiful lake with this beautiful view and this thing that screams, I'm racing in Finland, right? Then the ramp, they put us on this, I don't understand, this ramp that was really dumb. We had to run up and down this ramp 3 times because they let the pedestrians go under. Instead of making the pedestrians go up and over a ramp, they made us run up and over a ramp. And it was like going up and down an on-ramp to a highway. It was terrible. So I definitely was angry about the run course and the wheels definitely fell off for me. So I was a little tiny bit disappointed in Finland from what I really believed I could do versus how I finished. But I will say this, when I did cross the line and I found out later that I finished in 10th, I was really happy because I thought that was going to be a lot worse. It really was all I had on that day. I mean, it was really all I had to give. So there you go. That's the story about Finland. And then the cluster of trying to leave Finland was amazing for people. I'm really lucky that I left as soon as I did. I mean, hundreds of people are probably still waiting to figure out where their bikes are at this point. I have a friend here in Hawaii who they just found his suitcase in San Francisco on Friday. He literally has not had his suitcase since the race.
We are recording this in early October at this point. And so that race was weeks ago, correct?
It was the last weekend in August.
Yeah, so over a month.
Right.
Stuff has been lost. Oh my goodness. Okay. So related to that, there is also something else coming up here in just about 10 days. A big day for you. So you have qualified for the Ironman World Championships in Kona. It's my understanding that this will mark your 8th appearance there. Is that correct?
That is correct.
That is fantastic. So how are you feeling at this point, 10 days out from the race, looking ahead? How are you feeling?
Well, I'm anxious. I am excited. I kind of wish it was this weekend. I feel very ready to race. This build has been probably one of the hardest that I've done out of the 8 years. I have done a lot more mileage a lot earlier in the year. And my coach and I had a big conversation back in June, and I set some pretty hard goals. And when I mean hard, I mean, I like drew a line that could not be misunderstood in the sand about what I want to achieve at this event. I spent a lot of time in Hawaii. We own a home here that we vacation rental. I feel like it's my course. You know, I have ridden no course more ever in the whole entire world. I have ridden the Ironman World Championship course more than any other course. And I love it. I love the challenges of it. I love the spiritual connection. And it's another one of those, like earlier in our conversation, I get very emotional talking about Kona. There's something really, for those that know, they really understand like the emotional charge of crossing the finish line and the struggles and the achievement. I'm very, very excited. And right now I'm just trying to stay bubble wrapped. I just need to like make sure that I don't get COVID. All these social things that really scream Kona that you always want to do, you kind of have to stay a little bit away from them because it's so easy to get sick when your body's suppressed from training so hard. And it's easy to hurt yourself now. And your focus is starting to widen out because the race is coming. I mean, even today I'm running along and I'm daydreaming about, I'm running up this hill and I'm like, this is the last climb going to Pilani. And I like step in a hole and I'm like, what are you doing? You know, have a heart attack, swear at myself, calm down, you know, the whole thing, you know, you're like, you're kidding me.
This is a rough time to roll an ankle.
Right. You know? And so there's just this lots of trying to remain calm, trying to keep the emotions in check, but I'm very excited. And I'm really excited about the Women's Day. I know there's a lot of controversy around having the race for the women only, but you know, I'm going to talk about this from two different perspectives. As an athlete, it is a little bit hard because I have been somebody that qualified for Kona by 37 seconds. You know, I had to run a marathon at Arizona and I did not walk one step. If I had stopped one time during that marathon, I would not have finished and qualified for the world championships. And it's always been hard as a woman to know that you only have one or two slots in your age group and that every one of us that wants those positions, we're going there with our A game and we're going there to get those spots. I remember when I beat the girl by 37 seconds, I was over the moon. Don't get me wrong. But also my heart broke a little bit for this girl who was only 37 seconds behind me. And as a competitor, deserved to go to Kona as much as I did. She's not going to get to go. So as an athlete, now when they're handing out slots like Pez dispensers, it's hard on some level. You know, you're like all of this work and all of this energy and the stress and anxiety and all the sacrifices, all the movies I've missed and all the girls' nights out and, you know, all the sleeping in mornings. And then somebody that finishes, you know, 27th in the age group gets a slot 3 weeks after the race happens because Ironman writes them and says, by the way, do you want a slot? So as an athlete, there was this moment of, I felt a little cheated, a little robbed. I feel like, oh my God, all my hard effort and these people, you know, but then I take a step back and I'm like, you know, that's not the right perspective to have on this. And then I think about it from a coaching perspective and it's phenomenal for our sport. This is so important for our sport. We need people to come into our sport. We need women to come into our sport. This is an amazing sport. It gives you so much, the confidence that it builds in people and the capability of knowing I did this thing. I went out and I set this goal and I achieved this thing. And when you cross the finish line, there's no feeling like that. As a coach, we need to attract women and we need to be able to say to them, look at you. You have these opportunities, you know, work harder, strive to be better. You know, it's just like starting a new business. In the first couple of years, this is the way it's probably going to need to be to get people attracted. But I really believe with all my heart in 2 to 3 years, it's going to change our competition. We're going to become more competitive as women across all age groups. You know, those slots aren't going to roll as far down. We are going to continue to see these women that got to come here and experience this. They're going to go home and work harder. They're going to go home and inspire people around them. They're going to inspire little girls to come into our sport. And that side of it trumps everything for me. That side of it, for me, I'm excited that we have our own day. And I'm sad that we, as athletes, I'm sorry that the community of Hawaii can't see the massive financial impact that they get from us being here. And I'm sorry that they can't, you know, look beyond the not in my backyard attitude, because I spend a lot of time here on the island and I talk to a lot of people and I try to educate them about what Ironman does for the community of Hawaii. Ironman gives millions of dollars to the Big Island, the swimming pool. They're the people that keep fixing the swimming pool and keeping the swimming pool that all the athletes swim at, but also all the kids who are learning how to swim. And, you know, they donate money for the PATH program. They give free turkeys at Thanksgiving. They give out hams at Christmas. I mean, there's a lot of things that Ironman does here that I don't completely understand why they don't promote it and why they aren't out there telling people we do this. But also on some level, it's the responsibility of the county of Hawaii to say, hey, this organization and the people they bring here bring millions and millions of dollars. But yeah, I'm very, very excited about the day. And that really was a very long answer, wasn't it?
We've had a few of those. It's all good here. So one of the things that struck me about that is that with a relatively recent change to the men's race and the women's race and splitting the day, I'm wondering if it might have caught some of those people off, maybe catching them off guard isn't the right term, but they weren't necessarily ready for the availability of slots now, where they say, oh, okay, if a spot rolls down to 27th or whatever it might be, otherwise unheard of. So maybe folks just weren't ready for that expansive development of opportunity to race in a women's only field on Kona, which is mind-blowing to me. I think of having never raced the world championships at the iron distance myself, I think of the TV coverage that I've seen, and I think about the Peloton-ish lines of cyclists out there just in hundreds trying to go out there and avoid drafting and all of that stuff. For the women to have their own opportunity to race on that course is fantastic. I get goosebumps just thinking about it. I would love to be there with you in 10 days when you're racing that course. I wish you all of the best with this experience. And I also understand that you have some other lofty goals for future world championships. For those in the community that don't understand the dynamic now, please correct me if I get this wrong here, Rebecca, but the men's and women's races for the Iron Distance Championships are going to be alternating locations. So we have Kona, and then we have Nice, France, and the men and women are basically flip-flopping every other year. That's my understanding. Is that correct to your understanding, Rebecca?
That is correct. From what we understand, that is the arrangement through 2025. So this year, the men raced in Nice in September. We're racing Kona October 14th. And then next year, the women will race in Nice in September, and the men will be on island in Kona in October. Correct. And then in 2025, the flip will happen again. And then from what I understand, they have the contract again through 2026. So my understanding is this is our world championship path for the next, basically, you know, 4 years, 3 years after this year.
Okay. And we'll see how it develops after that. But I know it's been a long time coming with compressed fields at Kona and trying to find ways to expand racing opportunities. I'm excited about a women's only championship on Kona on the 14th of October. I don't know if this will air. I doubt this will air by then. So maybe when people are actually listening to this, they'll know the result and they'll know how the day went. But I'm looking forward to following along and spectating virtually on that race. So I wish you all of the best.
Thank you so much. I am excited.
All right. We have been enjoying quite a lengthy conversation here. So I'll just kind of wrap up here with a couple of additional questions, if we can. What would you consider to be the biggest mistake that you have made while training or racing?
Well, you know, it probably comes back to what we talked about earlier when you asked about the underrated, and it's nutrition. Almost always my mistakes that have crippled me on race day have to do with nutrition. And I used to use a hydration system, which I won't tag here on the podcast, but I would definitely never use again, that has broken off my bike 2 times only in Kona. Like literally I've, you know, hit a bridge crossing and the whole entire front of my hydration system breaks off my bike. That happened to me in 2022 again, where I lost my nutrition going down the hill, down Kwaihai. And I stopped because there was an ambulance there and used medical tape to tape this thing back onto my bike. But what had happened was the medical tape got wet and dropped down into my front tire just enough that it rubbed a hole in the bottom of the bottle. And I kept filling the bottle with my nutrition from my bike. And I just couldn't figure out why I was drinking so much. I was like, what is going on? Like in your head, you're trying to figure out what's going on with your body. You never think to yourself, there's something wrong with the, and I couldn't hear it rubbing. And so sure enough, I was dumping all my nutrition into my bottle that had a hole in it, and it was going right out. So it took me until, unfortunately, like mile 75 to comprehend that this had happened. But by mile 75, I had no nutrition left. And I was trying to use nutrition at aid stations. And then, of course, in 2022, the aid stations were less because we didn't have enough volunteers. And so they weren't every, 10 miles, they were every 20 or 22 miles. And so by the time I got to the run, it was a disaster. I've never, ever wanted to quit before. And so the devastation at like 0.5 miles into the marathon of, I was walking, talking to my husband who was next to me. And I was like, I want to quit. I want to walk off the course. You know, I was just miserable. And his answer was, I am never going to tell you that you can quit because that will forever be my fault. He's like, there's no way. You're not quitting. You're not quitting at 0.5 miles. You're not quitting. And so, you know, I was happy with the 14th place finish considering how terrible the day was, but it's definitely the answer to your question is making bad choices with nutrition or having problems with nutrition, especially in an Ironman. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that is critically important. And I know I've heard it a number of times and you've heard it as well that, try nothing new on race day. When you're put in a situation where you have to figure something out, you have to problem solve. My bottle hydration system is broken off my bike. How do I figure it out? Guess what? You're trying something new on race day. And that's part of why they tell you not to do that. So you can try to avoid all of that stuff. And we certainly don't want to put any particular product company or anything like that on blast. You know, everybody out there, I'd like to think, is trying to put forth quality products. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. But definitely try your stuff, work with it, train with it, make sure it works for you. Know that occasionally something is going to go wrong. And when that happens, that you need to have a contingency plan for that. So with that, I am glad that you were able to power through and have a favorable result on a really tough day. I can't even imagine what that must have felt like as you're pouring your nutrition into that bottle and it just seeping out the bottom of it.
I'm not gonna lie, I cried a lot.
I can imagine. well, there's more hydration problem. I mean, come right. on.
Dehydration from salt, damn it.
Yeah, that does not help. So, and again, just thoroughly enjoying the conversation here, Rebecca. So I appreciate it so much. I do have one other question I did just want to wrap up with here, kind of alluded to a couple of different aspects of it here. But when you're training and racing with other women, what do you see as some of the key differences that you see as part of the women's triathlon culture today?
Oh, man. You know, I think the first thing is one of the things I've really appreciated being here, on the island, all the athletes are starting to arrive is we're all so nice. Women are so friendly. And I was coming up on a woman on the bike yesterday out on the Queen K, and she stopped to take pictures. And my heart exploded. I was like, this is the best ever. Like, no offense, guys, but no man is going to stop on his bike ride to take a picture of the view. And I come up on her and she is in the way, but it's not a big deal. And I'm going to go around her. And she is so sorry. And she, she's trying to get out of the way. And I'm like, you're fine. You're so fine. Everything's fine. And, no offense, guys, but can't tell you how many times I've ridden up on some guy that's got his bike sideways and his attitude is like, I'm in the way. I think that's the biggest thing. Like, there is this group hug. There's this feeling of like, we've achieved something that maybe we've deserved for a long time. And I find it really interesting, the men out there that have opinions about it. I'm not an anti-guy person at all. And I actually really do enjoy racing with men, but I find that racing with women, it's a lot fairer. Those girls that can really swim well and get out of the water with all these men and then can ride through a field with men versus somebody like me who is all by myself, because I'm way back in the pack when I get out of the water. But I think that's the biggest thing. And I'm excited about all the different shapes and backgrounds and how these people are getting to realize a dream. Like, it's really special.
That's great. You had mentioned that you had a pretty interesting story that had happened, something had happened to you recently with last year's Ironman winner. Does that ring a bell with you? I was hoping you could share that with us before we wrap up today.
Yeah, so the Energy Lab, which is the back half of the Ironman run course, and honestly, it is the most brutal section of running of any course anywhere in the world that I've ever run. So a lot of athletes go out and train that part of the course because it is the place where your mental demons will destroy you. You're the furthest away from the finish line. It is the hottest part of the day. So whenever you're out there, you always see tons of people, but nobody's very nice out there. I don't know if it's because it's just miserable, even on a training day. Everybody's got this thing that they've got to get done and they want to be focused. But I'm out there and I'm just starting my run and I'm coming back and I see this woman with an entourage. And in my brain, I'm like, great, who's this? Who's this woman that's going to run down my 51-year-old 8:30 to 8:40 pace, hoping to hold mileage runner, right? And this car pulls over and the car pulls over right in the way. And all these people jump out of the car and it was like a Formula One pit stop. I mean, I'm watching this whole thing and I'm just mesmerized by it. There's ice flying, there's water bottles. She's running through, she grabs this bottle, she chucks fluids in, she chucks fluids on her, she chucks ice on her. I mean, it's just like a fury of people, like the Tasmanian devil around this person. And I'm like, oh my God, what is this? And she doesn't even acknowledge me because all of this stuff's going on and I'm passing it as it happens. And the car, you know, I go through and I'm like, wow, that was impressive. All of a sudden the car is like right by me. And these two guys jump out and they like create this little aid station for me. They give me water, they give me ice, and they're like cheering me on. And I'm like, who are you people? Like, this has never happened. Most people don't even acknowledge you in the lab, let alone offer you something or are nice to you. And I'm ahead of her, probably by about a mile and a half. And I'm headed out onto the Queen K. And I know that she's probably come from Kona, you know, and that she's well into her run. And I'm just starting my run. So I'm kind of running scared because I know this person's coming. And also I've tried to stick to my own racing plan, you know, my own training plan for the day. But every mile-ish, mile and a half, these guys show up and they're giving me water and they're cheering me on. And I end up running further than I should because I'm like, I have my own support crew. Who are these people? So finally, I get to about 7 miles out. I stop and I start to talk to them and I'm like, hey, who are you guys and who's coming? And I said, who's the woman that's running me down? And they're like, it's Chelsea. And I'm like, of course it is. I was like, well, and who are you? And he's like, I'm her husband. I'm like, you're kidding me. And so it just really like warmed my heart that not only are these people out here and they're doing amazing things for this woman and they're supporting her and, you know, getting her to have the best day that she can have, but also they're supporting me, who's nobody, and literally, you know, this age group or whatever, they have no idea who I am or what I've achieved or nothing. It was just purely because I was out there and they were out there doing great, amazing things. And that is amazing. That is like the story of a women's day right there. And I wrote her later and I said, hey, I know you don't know me. I just want to tell you, you know, thanks for sharing your support group today. Never, ever expecting to hear back from her. And she wrote me back twice. And that's amazing, right? Isn't that amazing? And I get it. We're all people, but we're all people that have different levels of focus. And you have to push the noise out. You have to get to a point before Kona that you go inside, you keep going inside. You have to stop being available to everybody outside, right? And I am certainly somebody that none of these people needed to be available to. And so, you know, I wonder, would the male world champion, which by the way, I've been out in the Energy Lab with him and his crew, a number of them actually, would that ever been afforded to a woman running out there? And I'll tell you, my answer is no. So there you go.
I think that's a great story, Rebecca, and I appreciate you sharing that. And I don't want to throw shade on anybody out there, but celebrate the awesomeness of that experience and a little glimpse into the world of women's triathlon at an elite level, just doing great things in the world. Thank you very much for sharing that story. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. And thank you for having me on and listening to me. And I feel, you know, really honored that you reached out and asked me to be on your podcast. So thank you.
You are very welcome. So Rebecca McKee, before we let you go, I have two final questions. Is there anything else you would like for our community to know about your journey in triathlon?
You know, the one thing that I like to leave people with is that, and I don't share my reason, but you know, if you're new to our sport, if you're not new to our sport, I really truly believe that looking inside and understanding your why, you know, why do you do this? What is it about this that gives to you? And, you know, what does triathlon mean to you day in and day out? But also, what do you give back to triathlon? Because as a race director, as a coach, as somebody that's been helping push for volunteers here for the race in Kona, it's so important for us to look beyond what we think we deserve because we're paying athletes and give back to our communities. And if that's just, you know, volunteering for an hour someplace or volunteering all day for a race, we can't do these events without volunteers. Think about what you get from the sport, and giving back a little bit never hurts.
Fantastic. Absolutely agree with that. If you have the opportunity to give back to a sport we all love, I highly recommend that. Also, Rebecca, I wanted to turn the floor over to you so you can let our community know a little bit more about what's going on in your world. I know you mentioned the metabolic lab that you own. You mentioned a coach that you think highly of. Would love to just open the floor to you and give you the opportunity to share about some of those things that are going on in your world.
Oh, yeah, we definitely, Peak is not a big business, but we have the metabolic lab and we also have a registered dietitian. So we do a lot of work with morbidly obese. We work with traumatic brain injury. We work with clientele that need to be prepped pre-surgery. Like, you know, maybe they're morbidly obese, but they need to have a knee surgery, but they can't have that surgery until they lose weight, or coming out of surgery, you know, rehab. We do a lot with that. We do all kinds of testing, you know, any sport and metabolic testing. We also recently purchased a DEXA. So we're doing a lot of cool things with the DEXA. And we coach people all over the world. We have an athlete in Vietnam. We work with people, you know, in Belgium and Australia, New Zealand. And we also have a number of really great coaches. Like I mentioned earlier, our lab tech, Lane Messing, who has a master's in kinesiology. And then recently we hired Lance Carter, who worked for Blue 70 wetsuits. And he's been in the sport for many, many years, has written a couple of books. He's an amazing man as well. And so we have a really good, fun team of people at Peak. We have a world-class elite runner that works with our running athletes as well. It's just a great lifestyle and a lot of fun.
Fantastic. Well, so if it's okay with you, Rebecca, I'd like to include in the show notes a link to the Peak Metabolic Lab so that folks can learn more about that if they have questions. And I know you mentioned also Cliff English was your coach. So if we have, if there are any other links or anything else like that that you'd like for us to pass along to the community, happy to share those. And then otherwise, Rebecca, we wish you all of the best. 10 days from now at Ironman World Championships in Kona. I hope you have a wonderful day with that. I know you've got big race plans above and beyond and after that, but we will certainly be sending you the best of wishes on your big A race day in Kona. Wishing you all the best. Thank you again for taking the time.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again, Rebecca McKee, for coming on the show. We really appreciate your time and all of the knowledge you shared. I hope our listeners found this as valuable as I did. If you did, please share the podcast with your training buddies and friends. And keep in mind, if you work out, everything else will too. We look forward to talking with you next time on Money Mile.